morning, everybody. This is WTBR's Morning Drive. My name is Bill Sturgeon. I am going to be with you for about 58 minutes today. A wonderful, wonderful show today. Really, really and truly. And I'm starting. It's a multicultural show. And we have in this city, and we have had in this city since I was in school and before me, a multicultural city. And right now, maybe more cultures are coming, more involvement. And I just want to congratulate the school system and the teacher, Emily Dace. Yeah, I'll get it out thoroughly. For the commitment to this, to these students, because they deserve it too. We're all descendants of immigrants. Let's not forget that. And I just want to say this, if I may, Emily, the teaching in a multicultural classroom, a rewarding yet complex endeavor that needs special set of skills. The role of the teacher in such a setting extends beyond traditional instruction to encompass fostering inclusive and culturally rich learning environment by developing cultural competencies, employing effective communication, and implementing inclusive teaching strategies. Educators can navigate the challenges and capitalize on the opportunity presented by the multicultural classroom. I've read that, obviously. But let's go for, you live it every day. Is that pretty much what goes on?
Well,
and more, obviously.
Absolutely. In my role, I'm working more with the teachers of the kids who are learning English, the language. However, I have taught in classrooms at PHS and in South County, which are becoming increasingly multicultural and multilinguistic. So our schools today are filled with kids from all over the world, some of whom speak English and some of whom are learning English. And so navigating how to make the content accessible for those students who are still learning English is a special skill set. And on top of that, we have kids coming from different cultures where school is done in a very different way, and their expectations around school and around the authority figures in school might be different from our own. So learning about other, you know, students from other cultures who, where school might be more cooperative than it is here in the United States. It may involve more teamwork in class, whereas we are more individualistic in the United States. Learning about students' approach to authority figures and formal versus informal language and how that's used in their culture. All of these things kind of inform what we need to know about our students and so that we can best teach them.
Yeah, I think you're really illustrating, in my opinion, some really wonderful points. As we were talking off air, and a lot of people been watching this program for anything. I've had the good fortune of traveling the world, living in various cultures, starting back from my involvement in Vietnam. Mm-hmm. I really think that what we're doing in the city of Pittsfield in the school system is strengthening holistically our entire community. Mm-hmm. You know, my grandparents came from Ireland, and they weren't always well received, even here in Pittsfield. But I think we're trying to change that. And a best way, in my opinion, is through education.
Absolutely. I think if you just look at North Street, I've been in the Pittsfield district for about 5 years, and just the changes on North Street alone from our immigrant population, you know, we want a revival of Pittsfield. This is where it's going to come from. These, you know, people are opening restaurants and stores and businesses, and really they can inject a lot into the city and the economy.
And as a teacher of teachers, that's what you are. not me. Well, listen, I had all I could do to get through school. But anyhow, imparting that openness to look beyond first blush. I was fortunate in Vietnam many years ago. Because we did a lot of work in the village, a really kind of an orientation to be open-minded, accept what you don't understand, rather than react to what you don't understand.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
And yeah.
I think teachers, what that to me is, that's got to be like a cornerstone. It was for me.
Absolutely. And I am lucky to have a psychology background. I taught psychology at PHS and at Monument Mountain South County. And social psychology is one of my things I'm fascinated by. And this idea that what we think of as normal, we don't question, is actually not necessarily normal for other people. You know, how we greet each other in the morning. Do we make eye contact? Do we, you know, when we're in a conversation, do we overlap each other's sentences, or do we wait for one person to finish and then the next person speaks? All of these things we just sort of absorb as we're growing up, and other cultures do it differently. So
yes,
I try to impart to my high school students or to the teachers I'm working with, to kind of step back from your own culture and look at it from the outside and question what seems normal to you. Right. And look at afresh, like maybe it's not normal. And one of my favorite things to tell students and teachers is, instead of saying, why do they do that? Like, it's an accusation.
Right.
Really, like, why do they do that? Like, really?
Right. 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 Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you know, one of the things that just jumped into my mind, and my mind's very old, so it doesn't always have things jumping in it anymore. Was in Vietnam, I was overwhelmed by the concern by the youth for the elders.
Absolutely.
They were dirt poor. But yet the young people, they are venerable to the young people.
Yes. This is something about American culture that I've come to realize doing the work that I do. We pride ourselves on giving our children voice. We pride ourselves on giving our children, you know, validating our children's feelings, right, and opinions, which is wonderful. People coming from other cultures tend more, not all cultures, but certain cultures, sure, tend more, yeah, to venerate the elders in their culture. And so the whole idea of formality and informality is very different in the United States versus some of the other countries that people come from. You know, speaking to your teachers, you know, as Miss so-and-so or Mr. so-and-so. And in some languages, they have a formal pronoun and verbs in a formal tense that we don't have in the United States. So if you're addressing an adult, you use this form. And if you're addressing, right, someone your age, you will use a different form. Very, very different. I was lucky enough to visit Ecuador with a friend of mine who I had tutored. And when walking into a shop in the morning, everyone says, good morning, miss, good morning, miss. And if you don't respond, they're kind of like, what's
they're
wrong?
Yeah.
Yeah. So I learned, you know, you walk into a shop and they say, good morning, miss. And I say, good morning, thank you. I'm just looking. Or you have to address the person with a greeting. And I used to laugh because my students would come into my classroom in high school and I would say, good morning. And there was just silence.
Yeah.
The kids from other countries, you know, if I said, good morning, they would always say, good morning, miss. So there's this different formality and treatment of elders in different cultures that for me it's lovely when my students greet me,
yeah,
and treat me with respect. And the parents are so like grateful and respectful to teachers. And so that's a lovely aspect of learning about other cultures.
And I think it is when people travel, that's like a college education if you're open-minded.
Absolutely.
Walk in there like the, pardon the expression, ugly American. Walk in with your eyes wide open and very accepting, and try to learn from it. When I was in South Africa, the learning there, I mean, I could have gone to college till the day I died, not learned everything I learned about tribal interactions, racial interactions, apartheid, growth, Mandela, who, should be mandatory reading. Every kid in the city of Pittsfield should read that. Somebody from the city of Pittsfield calling. Who are they? I paid my taxes.
Yeah. My friend in Ecuador took me to visit her uncle, who was in his 60s, I believe, and her grandfather, who was in his 80s or 90s. And, very simple lifestyle in a city. They had a small store where they sold eggs and kind of like a convenience store, but more simple than that. And my friend's uncle told me the whole history of the Inca population in Ecuador and had such pride in this history that he knew. And I was just fascinated. It was, there was such a sense of pride for their country and what they were founded on. And
it remains the same. Every country I've been in, there's a national pride. And especially like the Belgium and in the European UK. I was in a, hard for you to believe probably, but I was in a pub one night and they were talking about the war. And it was at a time, I'm older. I thought it was the Falklands War. And I said, well, the more I listened, I realized they're still talking about World War II. Because they were kids in the subways hiding in the tube, the bombing, and it's, to me, what you're doing is only strengthening our community as a community.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, people from other places in the world bring so much to us. One of the sort of tenets of English language education is to use an asset-based way of thinking about our students rather than a deficit-based thinking. Wow. So instead of saying, they don't speak English, oh my God, what am I gonna do? Right. They don't know how to do XYZ. What do they know? What have they brought with them? And we have students currently in the Pittsfield schools who have lived in, just one student has gone from Haiti to Brazil to Mexico, and then to the United States, living a little bit in each of those countries. What a wealth of experience young person has had under duress. So there's trauma there as well.
Right.
But they have experienced four different countries in their lifetime. And so thinking of that as an asset, thinking of the student who interprets for their parents when they go out in public, or I had students in Great Barrington who were part of a heritage dance group and they learned traditional dances from different countries that they were from and performed every year at the Festival Latino in South County. And one little girl who was struggling academically, she had some problems with reading and she was pretty quiet in class. She performed for the school and she was directing the kids. No, you go over there. No, you're supposed to be in front of him. She was in charge. And the teachers that saw this were just amazed because she had so many strengths they had never seen before.
Right.
So when we look at the assets that people bring to our community, there are huge, huge assets. If nothing else, learning a second language, so many Americans don't know a second language. The ability to learn and become fluent in two languages is huge.
Hey, and it's also mind expanding.
Mm-hmm.
I going back to what you just said, though, we talked about this through the week with other interviews. The book that I have found, and I based a lot of my work with youth with, because I ran the Violent Youthful Offender Program. That was interesting. But Howard Gardner's Multiple Intelligences. That should be a mandated for all parents to read. You know, I know a kiddo who struggled in school, but he is a superb, not a kiddo anymore, superb musician.
Mm-hmm.
He could pick up an instrument within a day he's playing it.
Sure.
I was thrown out of piano lessons.
And I have worked with kids who struggle academically, struggle with, you know, behaviorally. And when you sit down and talk with them, you know, big, healthy, strong young men who are like, I'm worried about my little sister. I need to be a role model for her. I want to take care of my mom. She's, you know, such family loyalty and care and concern. You know, that's his strength. He's got a huge heart. He may get in trouble sometimes, but he really cares.
Yeah, and I exactly. And the other piece is, and it's not a kind of a multicultural thing, but it can be, labeling.
Mm-hmm.
Labeling. I've been in my lifetime, I've written for other managers and stuff. Don't judge a new employee or a youthful offender by what you've been told.
Right.
Judge that person on a clean slate and make your own decision.
Yeah.
And yeah. I try to do that. I really do. And sometimes it's difficult, but I really struggle with that sometimes. But I think it's beneficial because you see a side of someone perhaps the other person didn't see.
Right. And you were telling me off air that you've been married 53 years.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you don't need marital advice, but one of the best pieces of marital advice that I've had in my life that I also apply to teaching is be curious, not furious.
Oh.
So if you see something and you're like, I don't, what are they doing? Ask questions, right? Ask questions. So why do you come to work late every day? Tell me more about what's going on at home.
Yes.
Right? At school, why do you miss school so often? Sometimes kids are taking care of other family members or they have to take care of younger siblings. Like, yeah, to ask those questions rather than make assumptions and judgments.
When I was in South Africa, to illustrate that point, I was working with, he was from the Zulu tribe.
Mm-hmm.
And he had just gotten a big promotion in the Department of Justice there. And we got talking, and their thing was, so we'll meet tomorrow at 9, and theirs was 9-ish.
Mm-hmm.
So one time I said to him, his name was Tommy, T-H-A-M-I, T-H-A-M-I, yeah. I said, Tommy, what do you always say ish for? He said, Bull, they call me, but they couldn't say Bull. I didn't own a watch until Mandela became president.
Mm-hmm. That's one of
the college educated guy.
Yep.
You know, it's just true that in that culture, ish was acceptable.
Sure.
In our culture, you know, I mean, I'm like this watching the clock tick down, you know, to the very second.
Yeah.
And I said, I don't know if that's right anymore. I really don't.
One of the activities I do with teachers who are learning about working with multicultural students is a short survey that was put together by, I believe it was a man who worked for the State Department. So he was training people to go overseas to different places. And he had just, he surveyed people from other countries to find out what makes an American, like what are the traits of an American, of someone from the United States. And time was one of them. Punctuality is very important to Americans. So it's several different sort of categories. Punctuality, informality is a general trait of people from the United States. the belief that anyone can progress and move up in stature.
Yes.
So it's interesting that these are people outside looking in and how they see us, which is really sometimes a better indicator than how we see ourselves, because they have a perspective. And you really start to think, like, why are we so punctual? Why is that such a big value in our culture? It's because we're efficient. We want to use our time wisely and make more money. Like, time is money. In other places, it's not so urgent. Like,
Money isn't so valuable.
Right, right.
You know, I mean, especially agrarian, like some of the African, sub-Saharan Africa countries, and even European countries, the farms that, if you're living in whatever, is on your own farm, you're not that crazy about making money. We're almost indoctrinated to that.
Right. We're more materialistic than other cultures are, for sure. There's a great documentary called Happy that is about a new psychology called positive psychology, where people are studying what makes people happy as opposed to what makes people mentally, you know, unhappy or ill. So it's a whole field that's opened up in what makes people happy. And one of the first segments in this documentary is a man who lives in India in a home that's, you know, very simple, simple. He has a job. He works at a tea shop. He has children who are healthy. He loves his neighbors. And he's like, they test his happiness as compared with American happiness. He's more happy than Americans are because he has a loving family. His children are healthy. He has a job. He has a house that doesn't leak. You know, these very simple.
No, but yeah.
But he's very happy. So we tend to get, you know, there's a concept called the hedonic treadmill, where we see something that we want and we work for it and we get it. And then we see the next thing that we want and we work for that and get it. And we just keep, we're never totally there. In other cultures where they have less resources, they sort of just are happy where they are because there's not that next striving.
Yeah, and you know, all in all, when you take a look at these various cultures, we learn, you know, I'm thinking back to, with all our sophisticated weather stuff, we couldn't predict when the monsoon was going to come, but they have no TV, they didn't have, you know, and the villagers would start moving to higher ground.
They knew.
They instinctively knew, and of course, being an American, said, well, dude, if it happens every year, why don't you just stay up here in the higher ground? And they went, we don't believe in that.
Yeah.
And they've been doing that probably for 1,000 years.
Sure. Sure.
And so when they come into a classroom in the city of Pittsfield,
right,
give us kind of a first day approach, if you would, please.
Well, this is something that we're sort of exploring right now, what the experience for a student should be when newcomer. Some of our students come in with some English and can integrate into a classroom very quickly. Others have no English at all. And we're really thinking about the best approach for those kiddos. There are schools in Eastern Mass who have what's called a newcomer program, especially in middle and high school, where they have classes with their English language teacher for a large portion of the day, where they're learning American, you know, they're learning American culture as well as language and traditions and how school works and how our school works. And then they're having lunch and gym and art and music with English speaking students. And that program would sort of shelter those kids for as long as they needed it. They would have the ability to say, I'm comfortable now to go into a regular classroom. And we could look at their English language skills and be like, we think you're ready. And so it would not be a permanent setting. It would be a transitional sort of setting. That is something I'm very interested in implementing. Right now in our middle and high schools, our newcomer students take 2 periods of English as a new language. And then they're in regular classrooms the rest of the day with math and social studies and science. The teachers of those classes really have to work hard to make that content accessible for those students. So it's a heavy lift for those teachers to, you know, you might have kids in your room who have no English and then kids who have some English, and it can be a lot of differentiation for those classroom teachers. So
how frustrating for the kiddos that have either a little bit of English or no English, and the teacher's up there talking on the board and putting numbers and all that, and you don't have a clue.
I'll tell you, working with the adult English language learners that I've worked with, I started learning Spanish, and I very much wanted to practice my Spanish. So my friends would invite me to meetings that they were having. It was about 15 minutes before I just shut down. Like, it's so difficult to pay attention and try to understand a different language. I made it about 15 minutes and then I was done.
Yeah, in some cases we had interpreters, and even that, you get exhausted.
Yeah, it's very tiring. Parents always say, like, my son doesn't want to do anything after school. He just lies on the couch. And I'm like, let him rest. Like, yeah. His brain is overloaded. Yeah.
I think what I'm reading, and I'm so happy, because I'm a taxpayer, and not a big one, but, you know, I throw in my pennies. But the openness, Emily, what you're telling me, and I hope the audience is picking up on this, is we are open-minded, we are flexible to change to meet the demand, and no one, in my opinion, I've spent the last week researching all these programs, pathways and all this. No one, here's my, correct me if I'm wrong, please. No one is a certified expert on multicultural education, in my opinion. There's a lot of learned people, but it's changing with the generations, just like our world is changing with the generations.
Absolutely. And we can, you know, we can all become more learned, more skilled. And there are people who've been doing it for a very long time who have a lot of knowledge about multicultural education. You know, we're getting students from so many different places in the world. We have students from Haiti. We have students from West Africa. We have a large Ghanaian population in Pittsfield.
Yes, I saw. Yeah.
We have some Asian students, some students from Japan, the Philippines. So it's not so much that you can never become an expert. It's just that there's such a vast world out there that we have to learn more and more as more people come to our
community. Generations change.
Yeah.
That's what I learned in Vietnam too. The younger generation, the teenagers, they were constantly in trouble in the village for not being respectful enough to the elders from their parents.
Mm-hmm.
And so, I mean, we're a society, a culture, a humanity, and evolution. We're going to take a 1 minute break. This is a fascinating. I'm so glad you decided you could make the time to come on. Her name is Emily Day. She's got a big official title. You tell it is when we get back. It's like Tammy Gage's title. You'd have to run a trailer truck for a business card. I can never remember what it is. Please stay tuned for this. As I said at the top of the show, unless your relatives were Native American, we're all immigrants. We're all descendants of immigrants. And I think back when to my grandparents coming here and what they had to go through to get a job in the mill and all these other things, at least what they did have, which a lot of people didn't, the Italians and the Greeks and all the... they could speak the language, the Irish, but others couldn't. So I'm always sensitive to that. We'll be right back. This is WTBR 89.7 FM on your radio dial. We are simulcasting on PCTV, channel 13-1. Please stay tuned. Hopefully, my theory of these programs are what? Informational, educational, a few laughs along the way. We'll be right back.
Stay tuned for more Morning Drive with Bill Sturgeon. Here on WTBR-FM.
Support for WTBR comes from Berkshire Community College. BCC provides access to higher education to everyone in Berkshire County and beyond, offering more than 50 high-quality programs, small class sizes, and an affordable education to help their students of all ages achieve their dreams. At BCC, their middle name is community. And from Sundrini Awnings and Home Improvement, retractable awnings, retractable screens, gutter and gutter protection systems, commercial awnings, and screen rooms. Customized solutions available online at Sandrini.com.
The Berkshire's only rock station, 89.7 WTBR-FM, Pittsfield, Massachusetts.
And now back to the Morning Drive with Bill Sturgeon on WTBR-FM, Pittsfield Community Radio.
All right, we are back. This lady you see here, she is. I am so psyched about this program, and you can tell. Her name is Emily Day. Emily, what is your official title? And I'm sorry.
That's okay. The person before me was using multilingual programs coordinator, but I've changed it to English language education coordinator. We have multilingual learners who don't take English as a new language classes because they speak English and other languages. I'm more focused on those kiddos who are learning English, so I'm calling myself the English Language Education Coordinator.
Well, that's a good title.
Yeah.
I'm calling myself Old Fat Bald Guy. Fits. They must have a anxiety when they come into the school.
Oh, I huge. Mean,
that the teachers have to address and overcome and help them overcome it.
Yeah, there's a... In English language education, there's something known as the silent period, which is really just when a young person or a new person, it could be an adult as well, is just trying to acclimate to the new culture. And, you know, you have what we used to call culture shock.
Yeah.
Anybody coming into a new culture, even if you speak the language. So learning the culture, like the weather, like some of these little ones are coming from countries where winter is very, very, very mild. And then they come to Pittsfield, the poor things, like just acclimating to that, you know, the new, the weather, the climate, the bugs, the way things grow, the types of plants, like everything around them is new and different. So that may be a period where they just don't speak at all.
Right.
They don't try to speak, and teachers should know not to push them, right? Just let them have that silent period. They can nod or they can point to things, but don't expect them to engage a lot in conversation. And, you know, some of our little ones and our families are coming from very traumatic circumstances. We have three families in the district that were evacuated from Afghanistan in, what was it, 2021, 2022? Yeah. Went through very traumatic experiences getting to Pittsfield. Kids who have escaped from severe poverty or violence in their home countries. Teachers have to know that. And we have lots of strategies that teachers are taught to make sure those little ones feel safe and they know the routine and they know what to expect. That's a big part of overcoming that trauma is just having routines in place that they can come to predict and to know that they're safe.
Yeah. You know, that for the folks out there that just think about that, put yourself in that position. You're going to a strange place. You can't speak the language. You've had a heck of a time getting there through the walk-in or however you got there. Or you like Afghanistan or Vietnam, or you've already had childhood trauma. And now you're walking into Pittsfield where the coldest temperature you've ever experienced was 60, which to us is a summer's day. But and just adapting to that and my hat's off to the yourself and all the people involved with this. Multicultural teaching, because while all teaching, my wife was a teacher for 42 years. All teaching is challenging, but this has to be so challenging because you, all these all these hidden things in the background. You can't speak, even if you have some knowledge of it. It's a surface. Like I have a surface knowledge of a lot of languages, some mm-hmm. of which I'm not sure the words mean. But but the sensitizing the teachers, that's got to be not sensitizing, but just appreciating what they do and knowing the trauma mm-hmm. that they go through. I mean, mm-hmm. challenging.
Absolutely. And, you know, schools are very different in different parts of the world. So adjusting to what's expected of students and parents here in Pittsfield really has to be sort of explicitly taught. It's not something people are just going to pick up on. So, for example, knowing that someone has to be at the bus stop when kids get off the bus, knowing that we rely on email for a lot of our communication, and many people don't use email very often. So that all of the technology that we expect kids to be able to use. And then in some countries, school is free up until grade 8. So many people don't go back to grade 8. So for kids to finish high school here is not, it's not a guarantee that their parents are thinking that way. Their parents may be thinking, oh, you're old enough to work now. So yeah, we have a lot that we have to be aware of and just be open to and explicitly talk to parents about.
And yeah, some cultures, you take a test to go to high school.
Right.
And if you don't pass it, you don't go. I mean, they're not going to pay for you to go.
Right, exactly.
And the teachers in a multicultural classroom, I just looked down at this, is unique set of challenges, learning barriers, varying learning styles, which we're trying to zero in on a little bit today, differentiating cultural norms, pose obstacles to a lot of effective kind of understanding. The teacher is as much a learner in some cases as the student.
Absolutely. I have teachers say to me frequently, like, do I have to learn about every single culture that comes into my room? I know nothing about the Philippines or Vietnam. Yeah. And, it would be hard to learn every culture that is in our district at the same time. But if you get to know each of your students and their families, then you're going to know some of what that culture is about. And it is useful to just kind of Google, communication style from Vietnamese people what are the expectations? Here's a good example. The Afghan families that we have, communication tends to go through dad. Like the fathers are the heads of the family.
Oh, yeah.
Organized. Yeah. Where in the United States, it's often through the mom. So, you have to just get to know each family and what their preferences are and what's the best way to communicate with you. And, just student by student.
And like you were saying, that is so important. A lot of Asian cultures also, the male is the dominant. Mm-hmm. Mother raises the children, but dad makes the decision. Now, I know that's going to send some people here crazy, but I don't make the culture up.
That's right.
And it's been that way a long time, really, like thousands of years.
Sure.
Just learning those little nuances. I mean, in my thing was mostly work related. One of my favorite stories, multicultural stories, I guess, was we were invited to the chief of police of Cape Town, South Africa's home, for a brie, which is a barbecue. Two of us from America and one guy from the UK. And we went there and we got out of the car and everybody was like looking at us. And it was a nice neighborhood. I mean, it was a really nice neighborhood. And I thought, well, maybe it's my head. They don't see a lot of bald guys there. So anyhow, we go in the house and the guy was very, he was more Americanized, UKized than the family. And the wife was, you could tell, was like my wife would be just like super nervous. And the kids were peeking at us. And Emily, this stays with me like it happened today. He said, oh, you'll have to excuse my family. You're the first white people who have ever been in my house. So that kind of sensitized me, okay, to different cultures, different expectations of people.
Yeah.
And after the kids were stopped peeking through the doors and stuff, we got introduced. And it was a different level of, I guess I was in a learning mode.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
You know?
I think that's key to, I mean, personally, I think all teachers are lifelong learners.
Oh, yeah.
Teaching is like one of the few professions where you can get to a point in your career where you're very skilled and you've been doing it a long time, and your next class that comes in can throw you for a loop, right? Like, you've never seen this behavior before.
Yeah.
You've never had this situation. So you have to continually learn about the people in front of you in your classroom.
Yeah. Yes. And isn't all of life, I mean, maybe because of my experience, you can't see it, but over there, I got the official portrait of Nelson Mandela. When I need courage for something, I look to that.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, guy was brilliant, 28 years in prison, came out and forgave everyone.
Yeah.
And then, you know, revamped his country.
Mm-hmm.
And when you see people like yourself and the teachers this is teaching at probably the highest level, because it's not only teaching reading, writing, and arithmetic, it's teaching culture, acceptance, what's permissible, what isn't permissible.
Yeah. And I think one of the biggest challenges is helping kids to feel that they belong. And this is a struggle, I think, in a lot of areas, a lot of places geographically. You know, we are a small community in many ways, and I did not grow up in the Berkshires. I didn't grow up in Pittsfield. And I grew up in the Midwest, where people have a different demeanor.
Yes, they do.
To strangers, they might be friendly to your face and talk about you behind your back, but they're very friendly to strangers, right? When you're in a restaurant or in a store, that kind of thing. And people in the Northeast are a little more reserved and a little more cautious. And I think a lot about how we create a sense of belonging. And for me, the sense of belonging that I have had here is when people know me, know my story, know where I've come from, my experiences. And then beyond that, if I'm able to contribute. So that's another challenge that we have as teachers in multicultural settings is knowing our kids, knowing their stories, knowing their family's stories, and then taking something that they can offer to us and letting them contribute to the classroom, to the community, so that we grow from them. Then they really feel like they belong.
Yeah, and you're right. I live in Leavenworth. And you're right. The middle of the country is certainly much different, quicker to accept you.
Mm.
Yeah, I found it.
Sure.
And how are the kids promoted? Like, you know, how do they go from like first grade to second grade or eighth grade to ninth grade?
So they continue with their age mates through the grades. What we do is we keep track of their English language skills.
Okay.
And they take a test every January that assesses their English language development. And when they've reached a particular benchmark for that test, they can then exit services for English language development. So, you know, every year we have a large group that kind of exit services. Then they're monitored to make sure they're continuing to make academic progress. But they basically just continue on through the grades as the other students do.
Now, here's a really stupid question, because do they have to take the MCAS?
They do. Yeah, it's a big issue. if they're here.
I couldn't pass the MCAS. I'd still be in high school.
Yeah, it's tough. If a student has been in the district for less than one school year or one calendar year. So in March, we send out data about our students. If a student enrolls after March, then the next MCAS year, they don't have to take the English portion of the MCAS test. They do have to take the math portion and the science portion if they're in high school. They can take those in Spanish if they are Spanish speakers. But then after that 1 year is up, they have to take all of the tests for MCAS. The real challenge is when we get a student, like say a student enrolls at the beginning of their sophomore year with zero English, getting them enough English that they can pass all those MCAS tests is really challenging. So we have alternative ways of showing their progress to, it's a long process to show that they've, they have the skills in another language, so therefore they should be able to graduate. But there is that alternative option for some of our kids.
I think sometimes some people more into the educational field than I am should sit down and rationalize what we're doing here. Just me. I go back to a lot of my life and know people who could pass a test and they didn't have the never mind. But you know what I'm saying.
I do.
Pass the test well. Sure. What do you think all of the new, however, I don't keep up with the politics of it, but influx is probably the better word, huh? Influx of new people from all over the world coming in through the borders. And what do you think that's going to be? How impactful will that be, do you think, on multicultural ed?
Are you talking about the people crossing the southern border of the United States?
The immigration, just what, 8, 10 million? I don't know. Who knows?
I think that has already impacted education in the United States. In fact, I don't want to misquote, but I think we're actually, the numbers are actually going down in terms of southern border crossings. I'm not
sure. Yeah, I think you're right. Yeah, in certain parts, in Texas.
I mean, it definitely has impacted our country as a whole.
Right.
Again, I wish that we were more curious about why that's happening. There's the sort of folktale of people standing next to a river and seeing a baby floating down the river, and they snatch the baby out and another one comes down and they snatch that one out. And someone finally goes up to the top of the river to see why the babies are in the river in the first place, instead of just snatching them out. I wish we knew more about how climate change is affecting Central America and how making the dollar the unit of currency in other countries is affecting crime and corruption, and like all these factors that are causing the migration. Is there any way to mitigate that rather than just shutting down the border? And
right. Well, now though, so many of them are here. I would just tell you, I don't want to run out of time. And give you, I have to go to Boston a couple of times a year for my health, mm-hmm. and we stay at a Holiday Inn. And 3/4 of the Holiday Inn, they were housing immigrants.
Yeah.
Morning. this not going to come out right, but it was difficult in the past, but most of them were Spanish speakers. Mm-hmm. Well, now they're more than Spanish speakers. They're people from sub-Saharan Africa, Turkey, all these other languages that we're really not versed in here in the United States. And That to me is going to be a challenge to all school departments.
Sure. I visited a school in Springfield recently that has kids from, who speak Arabic.
Right.
From all these different countries. And that is a challenge, but it's important to remember that people who work with English language learners don't speak the languages that their students speak. They're just teaching them English. So that's the goal, is to just, you know, make, you know, get them their English language skills. And I wanted to add one other thing when we were talking about MCAS. I thought about important to know that our students in our district can earn what's called the Seal of Biliteracy, which goes on their diploma, and it just, they take a test to verify that they are fluent orally and in reading and writing in two languages. Hugely important in our workforce today. If you can take a diploma that shows that you're bilingual and biliterate, that is an option for all of our students here in Pittsfield.
Well, I'll tell you, thank you. I mean this, and please pass this on to all your teachers. Thank you so much for all that you do and all that they do, because whether some people want to hear this or not, live with it. These folks will be part of our culture. They'll be part of our city. They can be contributors or they can be detractors. Some of that falls on us. A lot of it falls on them. But Emily, you're a gift to the Pittsfield school system. I really mean that. I'm glad you got out of the Midwest. Those people there.
It's been a joy talking to you. Thank you so much. And be curious, not furious.
Yes. And to Emily and to all my listeners, as I do every day, God bless. And today, rather than criticize or rather than be so negative, do something for somebody else. Do something that will make their day a better day. And I promise you, if you do, your day will become a better day. Emily, I'm always here. If you ever want to get anything out or come on, you're always, or any of your teachers, you're always welcome.
Thank you so much.
All right. Take care. And don't forget the pronoun, old fat ball guy, if you need to get a hold of me.
Thank you.
Be well. Bye-bye.